to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast here on Full Service Radio.
My God, you just blew us out of here.
Well, you told me
to
get close to the mic.
I said get close to the mic. I didn't say
blow my
eardrums out.
I want to give you what you want, baby.
Jeez.
So I'm doing it.
Okay.
With David and Nikki Nellis, we got a awesome show today.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest today is an old friend and an awesome chef and restaurateur, Victor Albizu.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for having me.
Did I tell you to talk yet?
Okay.
I do what I want on this
really,
show.
That's right. He's like, I'm
huge
over.
In Singapore.
I'm in charge here. And Victor is absolutely one of the premier chefs, not just in the the greater Washington area, but in this country.
That's true.
And we're going to hear about all his current projects, but I also want to hear about how he went from being a student in government affairs or something at George Mason University to a top chef across the country. So
right. Well, and also don't forget that we brought in, who is not here yet, but we'll be talking to Michael Iglesias.
Yes.
Iglesias.
Like
Julio.
Thank you.
But
like
not,
Julio,
but, not really.
But without that name. Okay.
Right. He doesn't have the voice.
She doesn't speak Spanish.
I don't speak anything. It's terrible. And it's very embarrassing.
It should be. But
it is. but it is. I hate that I don't speak another language. But anyway, he's
just
your Mezcal expert.
Baby.
Will you stop speaking?
You
know
talking?
What? You haven't been here for a while.
I know.
And I've
I'm
been doing this show
so
all on my own.
Here.
And
I feel the disconnect a little bit.
I really
right
am
now.
Feeling like maybe.
You're right. You should get out.
You should leave.
All right.
Anyway, but he's your Mezcal expert. So we'll be checking in some
yes,
Mezcal
and,
in a little
and then
bit.
Some. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Do you want to start?
Well,
go ahead.
Listen, you're a local guy. You grew up in Annandale. I know your story because my bookkeeper used to babysit you.
Oh, geez.
I know everything about you. Your diapers, the whole thing. But I would like to hear how you went from, George Mason University, and I think it was government affairs, whatever it was, to chefing. How did that happen?
Well, you grew up in this area. I'm a son of immigrants, and you kind of do what you have to do. You see your family do what they have to do in order to get success, a little bit of success under their belt. They opened businesses. They ran, my mom has a market. My dad ran his own businesses as well. And that was never really kind of meant for me, as far as my upbringing. It was always go to school, find a direction, doctor, lawyer, that whole fiasco, right? And so
not a fiasco, but
well,
it was
it's just not for me. It was
right.
It took me a while to realize that. I got, a couple of degrees from George Mason University before I realized that I didn't want to work in the subjects. I love the subjects of international relations. I love government and politics. I grew up
Wait,
in
Wait, weren't you also in a
city.
Rock and roll band, too?
Yes, I was, Nikki.
I mean, I think you skipped a very
He's asking.
Was it the Buttles? What was it?
Excuse me.
The Ruttles.
No, I don't even know what that is. That's before my time.
No. This was like White Snake
era. Oh, sorry.
Right?
I was in a heavy metal band.
Yes.
And we played a lot of, AC/DC, Guns N' Roses type of stuff. And mm-hmm.
I guess
still
it wasn't the Virgin Rubber.
Let me tell you something. I still believe that I'm going to do that again one day in my
so
life.
So does he.
So do I.
Maybe you two
I'm not
going to
start with you.
I'm going to start a band
anything,
called.
Anybody that says the Buttles on air, I'm not, whatever that is.
Would you
I'm
like
not doing
to be
it.
In my group? You could be.
No.
No
I'm fine. I'm good right now. I got a lot to do.
Well, this has devolved into a crappy radio show so far. All right. So you didn't want to do that, right?
No. So, look, I enjoy very much politics. I enjoy, the study of it, the reading of it, all that kind of thing. I love it. But man, when you start working in it, it just wasn't for me. I can't be in a cubicle. I can't be, locked to that kind of life. It just wasn't for me.
Politics hasn't worked out for even
for
Donald
most
Trump.
People, yeah.
Is going down a hill very quickly.
Yeah, I'm not going to that hill.
So, but no, because you're a creative spirit, and I could see that being at a desk all day would not be.
No, I just I felt like I really had to shake off that life, and I moved to Paris pretty abruptly. I was like, I saw this program, Le Cordon Bleu, and I changed my life radically within a few months to get there.
Okay, but before we go to your Parisian training.
Yes, ma'am.
Your mother.
Yeah.
I mean, she is a big influence on you and your cooking. She had a Latin market.
She still does.
She still does,
Plaza
right?
Latina in Falls Church, Virginia is alive and well and thriving.
But that had to have some sort of effect on you being around her cooking and her food. I mean, it was such a part of your growing up.
Well, it was the kind of thing where every day I left school, from grade school to high school, I left school and I went straight to work. Mm-hmm. And I worked with her all night. I closed the butcher shop, cleaned the butcher shop. You know, it was my life. It was our life. That's all I knew is business. And, you know, it was always very present that this was not going to be the life for me, right? We're not going to do this again. We're going to do something else down the road. And, you know, I kind of, you know, I didn't do that. I went right back in.
But you didn't. You took sort of the building blocks of what you're... mom was doing, and then built upon it.
But why Le Cordon Bleu as opposed to
something else?
L'Académie de Cuisine in Gaithersburg, Maryland. I mean, why go all the way to Paris?
I'm going to Paris.
I'm a pretty drastic dude, you know. And when I get a chance to do something, I'm going to do it the right way. And I never try to, you know. And no slight to any other schools. I wanted the experience. I wanted to be immersed in a different culture.
Did you speak French?
I did. Yeah. And I learned French.
Why do you look so surprised?
I don't
know. He speaks Spanish.
Did you learn French at where did you go? Annandale High School?
Well, no, I did graduate from Annandale High School, but before then I went to a private grade school and they taught me French there.
All I can say is "Oui, la toilette." So the most important,
really,
you know, as you get on in years,
the most
important
sentence. And I say it frequently now.
No, the other one is "La dishonne."
In the middle of the night, I don't know if that's the right thing.
Anyways, what a crappy show this is so far.
You keep saying that. It's enough.
Okay.
I think it's a good show.
All right.
Now she's mad at me.
No, I'm just annoyed. Okay, so you go to Le Cordon Bleu. How long is that program?
It was a year, about 9 months, but I spent a few extra months working in kitchens throughout Paris and traveling and doing as much as I could and draining every last red cent I had to learn everything I had to learn.
And what was it about the training, that classic French training, that spoke to you as you were in it? Because it's really hard.
It was more the cultural... idea of food as, you know, as a birthright, which this country is starting to get a little more of. Mm-hmm. But in general, you know, you go to Europe, you go to, you know, Spain, Italy, France, the marketplaces, the places that were also food centric, you expected to have the best food available to you and you had to be able to get the best. You deserved it. That's the feeling there. Mm-hmm. And that was something very shocking to me. This was, you know, around... year 2000 or so. So I'm not trying to date myself too much, but
you're not.
But
I've dated myself.
And he had a really good time.
Oh, in the toilet.
I loved me.
Gross. So yeah, for me, the experience of living and seeing how other people do it, you know, it's all about food over there, and it's all about great food. And mm-hmm. So it shaped me.
I bet. Yeah. So when you left Paris. And France in general.
Yeah.
Then you came back here and you were like, now what? Where am I going?
It's funny. You know, when I left Paris, I came here and I was looking for a job and I was offering. It was a very different day. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I went to Citronelle and I'm like, look, I just graduated. I've been working at 3-star Michelin restaurants. I just came from Paris. I'll work, you know, for whatever, you know. And they're like, no, we're good. Thank you so much. I'm like, well, I mean, are you sure? I'll work
for
free.
Met me?
I'll do anything. I'll wash, you know, the dishes. They're like, no, you know, we have a laundry list. Just give me your resume. I mean, I wish we were living in those times right now because, you know, the industry.
Now you walk in and you're like, yes, thank you. I don't care what you can do.
Who fired you? Right. I don't care.
Get
it doesn't
back
matter.
Over here,
yeah,
right.
Just come.
Those three murders don't matter in this.
You laugh, but it's kind of true.
So it was a very different day. So I ended up starting my career at the Tabard Inn. Believe it or not.
Which is a great restaurant.
I loved the Tabard Inn. It was a great little place for me to start my career.
It was sort of like a secret spot.
Yeah.
It really was. And it was a lot of fun. And I worked with a chef.
What year was this?
2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I worked with a chef named David Craig, who used to work for Jean-Louis Pelletin for a long time. He was a great guy. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot from him. I really got a lot of respect for him. And then it shot off from there. I started making my way around the city. And I worked at fine dining restaurants. I worked at high volume restaurants. I worked, tried to get as much as I could out of everything and see as much as I could.
And then you ended up when Laurent Tourandel opened BLT.
Right.
That was you.
I did. Yeah.
How did that happen?
You know, it was
because that was a good gig. Do you know what I mean? Like it gave
you. I'll tell you something. It was really funny. I had just had my son. Mm-hmm. I don't know what year exactly it was. 2006.
He's the second handsomest kid I've ever seen.
I know, he's delicious.
He's cute, yeah. And I had been on hiatus from the kitchen for a while. And I had grown quite the scruffy beard, and I was just kind of not caring. I was taking care of my son, and I had just kind of burnt out, you know, the air quotes burnout chef. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from somebody I used to work with, and in the middle of the morning, it was like 6 a.m, something ridiculous, actually, by your cousin. Oh, anyway.
Adam William Housky.
Yeah.
Yes, so put that in air quotes, please.
Wait, he might be listening. No air quotes, Adam.
He calls me. Really early, he's like, "It's Adam," because Adam doesn't say hello.
Oh, wait. So, did you work for Passion Food Hospitality?
I did for a
minute. Is that where you met him?
Yeah, I met him.
DC Coast?
At DC Coast.
Got it. Yeah.
And then he's like, "Laurent's in town. You want to talk to him?" I'm like, "You know."
Was he already GMing there?
He had just started.
Right, because they hadn't opened yet, right? Yeah,
they were just open.
Okay.
So, I replaced the initial chef.
Okay.
And
that lasted about 30 seconds.
And I was like, "Look, I'm good. I don't want to be a chef at a steakhouse, you know." And they're like, you know. So I called my stepdad, and my stepdad's the best. And he's, and I'm like, "Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go to the interview. If you want to come watch the kid, you can. But, you know, I'm good. I'll stay home." He's like, "You need to go to that interview right now. You need a job." And I'm like, "Okay, fine." So I show up there, and Laurent asked me. I'll never forget. He asked me, "So why do you want to work for me?" I'm like, "You know what? I don't, man. I don't know what I'm here for. You know, I don't want to make steaks. I don't want to do any of this stuff. And I appreciate what you're doing. And I know that you worked for Claude Truggo for a long time. And I'm sure, you know, it's just, I'm not sure it's the right fit for me. I was kind of being a little, it wasn't for me." And then, you know, I went home.
He was like, "Oh my God, now I want you."
I swear to God, I went home and I got a call within an hour saying, "Laurent loves you. We need you in BLT. We need you to come right away." I'm like, and it just went on from there until...
I think this is how you caught me.
Yeah, it was something like that.
I think
this.
It was probably the other way around. But, from...
Yeah, I was very coquettish, you're right.
From there, it was the history. I really enjoyed my time with BLT Steak and working with
Laurent. You had more creativity than you probably thought. They let you do a lot.
They let me do everything.
And I don't mean it like that. But, I mean, you were a partner there.
It felt really good there.
It was your restaurant.
They opened the door, and, you know, we kind of...
took off like a rocket.
We hit it really hard out of the gate. I mean, mm-hmm. all the reviews went up. Everything went soaring, and it really was a place that I was really proud of, and we were able to put on the map in a serious way in the city. So, and really, it started my trajectory as to where I am today. So I'm very grateful.
Well, I feel like when you were at BLT, I mean, that's where I met you.
Yeah.
To me, a lot of it had to do with the way they presented you. You know, even though it was a lot. Laurent Tourneau property, you were the chef, and they really showcased you, and we came in all the time for, you know, whatever new stuff you were doing, new menu items, you know, I know it wasn't your restaurant, but you acted like it was, you treated it like it was yours.
For one reason or another, I think that when I signed on at BLT, the company was growing in a pretty significant rate, and as good as they are and as big a bandwidth as they had, you know, when they had somebody they could trust and they felt comfortable with, they let them roll. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, it's not unlike Druneau at The Source. Pucks,
right, yeah. At The Source.
You know, if you got somebody good, let them do their thing.
And another thing that you know, it's funny you bring up Scott because we were all kind of in that
I know,
kind
you were
of,
all together.
In that pot, right, where we're working. Scott was working for Wolfgang, and at the time, Adam Sobel was working, you know.
Yeah,
and
Michael Mina,
So, you know, so there was so much of that happening because that was the time mm-hmm. for that, for the big name chef. And you know, where else do you work? You know, these were the powerhouses of the city at the time. And now
you're the powerhouse of the city.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing our
best.
Don't look at me.
Yeah.
I don't even know your last name. All right. So.
Louis La Toilette.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. So you leave BLT Steak.
But wait, let's talk about leaving BLT. Like, you know,
That's what I just said.
I know, no. But I mean, were you like bored? Were you tired? Were you like, "I want to do my own thing"? What were you? Done?
No, you know, I definitely wanted to do my own thing, and I think it was time. Del Campo had been kind of burning inside me for a very long time to do, and
well, let's talk about what Del Campo was. I mean, what the idea was before you left.
Well, it was, you know, I wanted to do a South American grill or a South American steakhouse. And, you know, it was, it became very, very clear to me, especially with my time at BLT, exactly how I wanted to do it and all the things that I wanted to put into it. And it was a lot of my upbringing, a lot of heart and soul that went into that restaurant. And you know, one of the things that I'm most proud of to this day, you know.
But what was it that you felt was missing in the DC dining scene that you wanted to present at Del Campo?
Well, I think, you know, Del Campo marked the influx of a lot of Latin American restaurants into the city.
Without a doubt.
You saw a lot of kind of, you know, air quotes again, you know, kind of copycat restaurants that came in and started taking on that perspective. From a steakhouse, you know, point of view, and showcasing it, and I was proud of that. I was mm-hmm. really proud of introducing a new cooking style to the scene, where we're doing a lot of charring and burning and smoking. And
okay, let's rephrase that. Everything hit the grill. I mean, yeah. That's what was so amazing about the restaurant, whether it was the seafood tower or the avocado, whatever it was, everything touched the grill.
It's nostalgic when you start talking about it.
So this is a case of Boy Meets Grill.
I'm serious. Like, it was always interesting to see how you took whatever popular trend that was happening and made it your own. I thought your seafood tower, like with the grilled seafood box, was brilliant because you were seeing seafood towers all over the city, and while everybody loves them, they were getting boring.
All right. Well, wait. Can I jump in with something? Because people who are not from D.C., who are out there in the world hearing this, they're like, okay, so what's a Del Campo? It was picked by Esquire magazine as the best new restaurant of 2014?
2013.
That ain't bad.
No, it was pretty good.
Local Boy Meets makes good.
Well, you know, we had a great run there.
You already said that.
No, I said Boy Meets Grill.
Oh, okay.
You gotta.
He's full of them, though.
Stay with me. Really, I'm full of something
similar.
No question about it.
Okay, go ahead.
No, but absolutely, Del Campo hit hard as soon as we opened the doors, and it was life changing, and it was.
But at the same time, you decided to do Taco Bamba.
Yeah.
So you had a fine dining concept and a fast casual concept.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah, and it's funny because it was one of those things where I didn't even know if it was something we wanted to promote, right? My mother came to me. She said, you know, there's a space next to us at Plaza Latina and Falls Church. Do you want to, you know, I'm going to sign a lease because I'm just going to take the space. That's my mother.
She's like, it's mine.
She's like, I'm going to do something. I'm like, just don't do that. You know, let me do it. I'll do it. She's like, well, I'm signing the lease. And so I was like, okay, great. So all of a sudden I had two projects to do pretty quickly.
But did you have Taco Bamba in mind? Did you know what you wanted to do? Because again, you were really ahead of the curve on the taqueria
on the
explosion.
Fast casual.
Yeah, well, fast casual, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. Because this is what? How long ago was this?
This is 2013.
Yeah.
So 2012 we started planning it. So it was one of those things where, like I told you, I didn't know if I wanted to promote it because I didn't know that chefs, you know, with you know, big name chefs.
Right, you didn't know how it would hurt, whether it would hurt you or help you. Sure.
Yeah, so at the time, it is funny saying that now.
Of course, because now everybody wants it.
Yeah, because now there's, you know, thousands of tacos.
I think we should tell people what it is, because it's not just your BS, you know, run-of-the-mill tacos.
No, it is not.
I mean, Taco Bamba's an edgy taqueria. It's got a real rock and roll vibe to it. You know,
it's a gourmet.
Spicy, it's loud. It's
don't
fun.
Don't call it gourmet. Gourmet.
Wait, let me finish. It's not priced gourmet, but it's gourmet. I mean, the food there is as good as any sit-down shishi restaurant.
Thank you, man.
What's that thing? Is it the Royale? What's it called?
The Royale with cheese. Yeah.
How do you not know that line?
It tastes like. I mean.
Yeah, it's my. You know, it's a little burger taco. It's
oh god,
it's so good.
So good.
Okay, so
thanks for bringing them. That's great.
Please. Then he would have complained because he's doing paleo. Oh, please don't even start.
Yeah, no, you look great.
I feel great, and you look great too. Let's do another show about
you guys are dressed like twins. By the way, I didn't even mention
we're a couple. We wanted to come on the radio and announce it.
Okay. Taco Bamba, initially you started in the suburbs.
Well, yeah, it started in Falls
and you
Church.
Really didn't want to, but you didn't want to bring the concept initially to the city.
No, and it was not until this year that we brought it to the city,
right?
Because there's a lot of great chefs doing a lot of great work, and there's a lot of great concepts out there growing and growing and growing. And for me, I'm kind of old school, right? I wanted to make sure I didn't, you know, that the thing was going to be successful. And
yeah, but you knew when you opened up the first Taco Bamba.
Well, it took me 3 years to open the second one.
Okay.
So,
when you opened that first one, I remember going with you, mm-hmm. and there were like people like
lined up. When you go by there any day, you drive by, there's a lineup.
I know, and I was like, who are these people? Where are they from? Yeah. It was amazing.
They're called hungry people.
And it's in this kind of like elbow of the shopping center.
But that's what I mean. Like, it's a destination. You have to say, this is where I'm going for lunch.
Yes.
Specific.
Yes. And it wasn't like overnight, but it started to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then before you know it, there were lines. There were people sitting Indian style on the concrete outside. They were sitting on the curb. They were sitting in their cars, on their cars.
It's crisscross applesauce.
People were bringing their own tables.
It's called Native American style.
People were bringing their own tables to eat a Taco Bamba. And they would unfold it. And yeah, it was insane.
Okay, so then
So then when I saw that, I'm like, well, let me probably open another one.
Okay, so where were the other locations?
So we opened in Vienna, Virginia.
I've been to that one.
And then we opened in Springfield, Virginia.
Right.
And we opened in D.C.
So before we hit the D.C. one.
Yes.
Because we're going to have to take a break in about 8 minutes. So I feel like we should get into some mezcal.
Well, then let's talk about Michael Iglesias, the late Michael Iglesias, who rolled in here.
Hi there.
He's the restaurant director at Poca Madre and Taco Bamba downtown.
Yes, sir.
And he walks. Some people are gunslingers. He's got two holsters with mezcal.
Oh, boy.
In each holster.
And he squirts them all over the place.
He's been known to squirt a lot of places, but that's another show, too. Yeah. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you,
man?
Thank you for joining us. So, Michael, you got to get real close to that
mic.
So, Nikki gets mad at me, but you know, there are going to be people listening who haven't heard this before. Quickly, the difference between mezcal and tequila.
Ooh, that's a great question and the burning
mind. I only ask great questions. Right.
Tequila is a mezcal. Mezcal is a spirit that's derived by 100% distillate of agave. 10 different regions in Mexico, 36 agaves. And tequila falls within that denomination.
But I think when people think of mezcal, they think smoking.
Yeah, we get the smoke all the time, you know. And I'm like, you know, I tell people, would you rather have your chicken roasted or do you want it steamed? So I'd rather eat roasted chicken myself. And thankfully, I work with Victor, and we get to have all sorts of delicious steam chicken stuff.
Now, were you with...
Not at all.
So when you decided to open up, and we'll get into the other Taco Bamba and the Poca Madre, but when you guys decided to do this concept... What was your vision for the mezcal program?
What we wanted to do was honor Mexico in all of its facets. You know, so as Victor's vision for the food was about exploration and being rooted in tradition, but not having any boundaries. That's exactly where mezcal is today. You know, it's you go to these places in far out little villages in Mexico, and you're just amazed that they've been distilling for six generations the exact same way. Right, they're digging the pit like their great grandfathers did, and they're mashing the agave. And you know, modern life doesn't touch those areas. And I think there's an artisanal beauty to that.
Absolutely.
So we're honoring it, but also mezcal is finding its own voice right now. And from cocktail programs to mezcaleros, who are I brought a couple of fun things today that are really going out there and doing some fun things and some very.
No, we're gonna do it today.
What's a mezcalero?
A mezcalero is a man or woman that makes mezcal.
Okay.
What do you mean mezcalera?
Like a pizziolo.
I always thought that a pizziolo was a cowboy. No.
What's that?
Mezcalero.
No, mezcalero. He just told you.
I know, but I'm thinking back.
That would be a vaquero.
I'm thinking maybe it's a vaquero. Yeah. I'm thinking back to my cowboy movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Filmed in
Italy. All right. So why don't we, before we go to a commercial break, why don't you tell us about one of the mezcals you brought today?
Sure. Let's start with we brought a little Madre Quiche from Mezcal Vago, and they're beautiful, beautiful people, Dylan and Judah. And all of the mezcaleros. This is their newest mezcalero. His name is Emilio Jarquin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from a southern town called Nanche in Miahuatlan. And what I thought was cool about this is that the Madre Quiche as a varietal is really fragrant and floral, and chamomile and violets, all sorts of great notes. This cat crushes his agave with a 2-ton tejona, which is a stone wheel. And that's just what they do in the village. They have bulls that they use as their beasts of burden instead of donkeys or horses. And the two bulls pull the big 2-ton tejona. And what happens is it crushes the agave so quickly and so cleanly that the juice is really pristine.
But agave is enormous, right?
It's enormous until you cut it up with a machete. Yeah.
Okay, so they.
So is that the saying? He's got okay, big so toes.
It's enormous until
no,
his brother.
That's a different thing.
And what's funny is that he has like three workers, and one of them is his brother-in-law, who's always angry because he's like it's machete duty.
Okay, so they cut them up first. They don't they squeeze them whole. Okay, yeah. so they cut them,
and then they build their beautiful stone ovens with river rocks and hardwood. Then they roast the agaves for 3 to 6 days, depending on the varietal.
Wow.
And then...
slow and low, right?
Slow and low, that is the tempo, exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, well, can we try it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Poured. So what are we looking for in this?
So, you know, we're having a...
don't shoot it, David, please.
Yeah, sip it, don't shoot it.
Right.
And
I've seen you drink.
You know, this is distilled spirit, so we serve them in these beautiful.
Have never seen me drink because you've been too drunk to see anything.
What are you talking about?
Thank you very much.
So what you can tell right away is that it's herbal in the nose, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the sign of a Karwinski agave, which is a family of species.
Okay.
So it's a bad idea to smoke a cigarette and drink this at the same time.
What?
Oh my God.
I don't think it's
nice
smoky.
With a cigar, though.
It's good, but I'd say it'll go up like...
I mean, we play with blow torches, so you know anything goes, really.
Mm. So now, with this particular mezcal, if I was at the restaurant, would you advise drinking it straight, drinking it on the rocks, or drinking it in a cocktail? Like, how would you advise this spirit?
Or just with a little lime
this
or something
little clay,
like that.
The little clay pot right here.
I know. It's it looks like something my daughter
little
makes.
Little copita.
Yeah, that's exactly. Victor nailed
which
it.
Which is motivated.
When you're in Mexico, you're like, una copita, little copita. So it's all about sipping it. So you can always sip any mezcal that we have behind our bar. They're of that type of quality.
And we serve it with fruit.
Right.
So any seasonal fruit with this, I mean, mm-hmm. it
lights it up.
It really does.
Right now, I think we put cantaloupe and Italian plums and whatever we get from the farmer's market makes it onto the little fruit plate. Yum.
So mezcal is healthy.
Mezcal is very healthy. You know why you meet a lot of old mezcaleros? Because all they do is drink mezcal.
Interesting.
Very old.
Very old.
I'm looking at hundreds of
Stop
years.
Looking at me.
All right, we'll take a quick break while we sip our mezcal. This is David and Nikki Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Poca Madre, a little more Taco Bamba, and I think a little more Mezcal. We'll be back in just a sec.
We're going to be chiffazed by the time we get back. Listen to that music. This is the lilting tones of David Nellis and Nikki Nellis. Welcome back to Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to master chef and restaurateur Victor Albizu. Michael Iglesias is restaurant director for Poca Madre and Taco Bamba. And we're drinking mezcal.
It's good mezcal.
Well, we'll get into what's the difference between good and bad mezcal in just a second.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's funny how things kind of come into vogue. I mean, mezcal, you know, all of a sudden there are mezcalerias. It's like it's mezcal. How did that happen?
Well, I mean, it's a constant search, right? It's a constant search for presenting something in a new and different way that we've seen in our travels. And, at the end of the day, this is something that can't be denied. It needs to be served. It needs to be drank. It needs to be, people need to know about it. And
they need to understand it. Which brings me, so what I was going to say is before we get into more of the Mezcal program at Poca Madre, I think we should really talk about what Poca Madre is.
Absolutely.
So you decide, Del Campo was a very large space.
Yes.
A huge bar.
It was definitely a
L-shaped.
Very ambitious
first
restaurant. 200 seats. It was a massive undertaking. And I tell everybody, it was never the fact that Del Campo failed in any way. It just wasn't what I thought the future was for that area. And I needed to make a move that I thought would be longer lasting and keep my footprint in D.C.
Well, let's talk about that area because you can throw a rock and hit
the Capital One Center.
I know.
Where the Capitals and the Wizards play and the Mystics and the City Center and the Convention Center.
And
so people are going to come in for, I mean, they're going to come in to Poca Madre for a meal, an excellent meal. But to be able to come to Taco Bamba.
Right, but we haven't discussed what happened. You're like ahead of the game. Well,
but he's
it's the mezcal
Del Campo and you decided it's time for a change.
It was time for a change.
All restaurants are not supposed to last forever, and the idea that that's how it's supposed to be is wrong. You have to evolve.
And it was a 5-year run, as every restaurateur knows in the city now, there are so many more seats than there are people.
It's mm-hmm. amazing.
It's an incredible thing that's happened in front of us. And we have to change and evolve with the times. And so I thought bringing Taco Bamba, we were looking for a space for Taco Bamba in the city for the last 2 years anyway.
Right.
And I said, well, it's right under my nose. Let's figure this out. Let's see if we can't have these two concepts coexist within the same space. So at 7th and I Street, we decided to close down Del Campo and shelve it for a later date and open Taco Bamba up with Poca Madre in the back. And so you have these two vastly different takes on Mexican food, both chef-driven, both, a lot of fun, but very different perspectives. One's a quick, fast taqueria with a great bar, and the other is a more elevated experience with a modern take on Mexican food. I think it's the kind of food that you see happening much more in Mexico, what we're doing at Poca Madre. You see...
Would you say it's region-specific, or you've just been inspired? Because I know you travel there a lot.
It's funny because I did a lot of traveling in Mexico for Taco Bamba, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that what we do at Taco Bamba is very unique to me and what I want to do within a tortilla. And what I really found was that, man, I'm being floored by how great the upscale stuff is happening here in Mexico, and all this wonderful gastronomy that's coming from these amazing Mexican chefs, and it just kept hitting me left and right, and I wanted to do it so
well,
bad.
Well, when Rosa Mexicano came to D.C. 15 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody thought Mexican food was Tex-Mex.
Yeah.
And that was the first time anybody and. Not to say it wasn't good or is good or anything, but that was the first time anybody ever said
Mexican could be upscale.
That was the first,
even though it was a chain, but that was the first restaurant to open up in the D.C.
market. Yeah, I'm sure they cracked the door for it. And there are good Mexican restaurants in the city. I think that what Michael and I are doing within those four walls is very unique.
It is.
It's probably, whether you like it or don't like it, I think it's very, very unique. And I think no
We're
other
Thursday.
I think no other
again?
Restaurant.
Oh, no, I mean, we want to come.
I don't think it compares to any other restaurant in the city.
Well,
I think
you should talk about some of the things that you guys are doing there that makes it so unique. For example, you make all your own tortillas.
We do.
I think a lot of people would say, even people in the food world would say, I mean, there's a lot of good product out there. Why make your own?
Well, that's the question of the ages, right? People were always kind of, there are a lot of naysayers about Taco Bamba's tortillas because we buy them.
Because you couldn't possibly make.
We couldn't possibly make this many
tortillas.
You would
need a little factory.
A large factory.
Right.
Yes. And so Poca Madre had to have their own our own tortillas. And we had to, and that's the basis for a lot of food to grow off of, right? So, a lot of the flavors, I have to conceptualize with the flavors of that tortilla, and this is the same with Taco Bamba. But the tortilla starts the experience. So for me, it's probably the most important thing coming out of the kitchen.
We couldn't even discuss complete dishes with Victor until, you know, the tortilla was right. And it was, I mean, really.
It's
I mean, Chef was just like, tortilla right? And I was like, no, you know. And, you know, and Fez, you know, is.
I mean, how could we not mention
journey with corn.
Fez?
Fez, love Fez, yeah. Chef Fez Ali, he's my chef de cuisine and, you know, life partner.
Yeah, he really is. He's amazing.
I'm dialing your wife right now.
No, you guys have an amazing...
It's all right. I take him on the off hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I've worked with you a lot over the years and with Fez, and you guys have an amazing work relationship.
We have an amazing relationship in general.
Because he's able to execute what you want.
Yeah, I'm very lucky in that way. You know, I mean, you know, as sparse as the help is in this city, the people that I have around me, you know, I have guys like at the Taco Bamba side, Tom and Kirk and Travis, and on Poca side and Taco Bamba, we have Michael and Fez, and it's just, you know, it's a lot of power behind what we're doing, and I'm really proud of the team that we put together. It's not always perfect, but we do our very best to.
Well, when you were working together, the two of you, on the menu, how did you incorporate the drinks to go with the menu?
Well, you know, the menu and the cocktail program, Victor and I were, they're very symbiotic. I mean, they just, it was very organic. You know, I definitely had a vision of what I wanted to see. We wanted it to be elevated, but we also wanted it to be fun. You know, both Victor and I think Poca Madre is a culmination of many years of Mexican journeys.
Yep.
You know, so we talk about taking the journey, you know. Yep. So for us, it's like, okay, well, we've done Mexico. You know, Victor's done it this way and this way, and I've done it, you know, a couple different ways with, with different projects. And now, you know, we're together. We're like, you know, we just want to have fun. We want to be expressive.
Yeah, it's just the beginning, really. You know, it's honestly the beginning of a journey.
He's sending you love notes. So what mezcal are we trying next?
So this next mezcal, I'm so proud to have a good collection of my friend Eric Rodriguez's mezcal from Alma Mezcalera. He's been coined the Indiana Jones of mezcal because he goes to the far reaches of Mexico to source really unique and delicious mezcal. This is Lechuguilla, is the agave. And this is from Sonora. So we also like to show mezcal across the different states of Mexico, not just Oaxaca. This is bottle 10 of 24. So lots of fun time.
This is a spicy aftertaste.
10 of 24. So they only make 24 bottles?
24 bottles of this particular batch.
Okay.
So this batch was fermented in cow skin. So it's called fermentado en cuero, or fermented in leather. And then it's double distilled in an old Filipino style still.
What does that mean?
That's what's amazing about mezcal is that there are so many different ways of people doing it, and no one's ever discovered it. I mean, you know, Michael's been traveling all around, and he finds a guy, you know, who's doing
putting it in a cow skin, right?
And you know, we're serving it now in D.C.
Well, so how do you guys engage with your patrons on mezcal? Because, you know, listen, there is a preconceived notion that it's smoky.
Right.
And that, you know, people don't really, you have to educate them.
There's worms in it.
Yeah, the worms. Yeah, the worms. And I'm like, no,
that's tequila.
No, it's just in your salt.
I mean, isn't that just like a marketing ploy in the 80s,
it's really
right?
Bad.
But Victor makes me eat worms on the first course and you kind of don't know it anyway.
Okay, right.
So,
that's all over.
You know, we slipped it in. Yeah.
No, so really, how do you go about...
I thought your food generally had worms in it, no?
So, I think that one of the big things we were talking about, you know, how did mezcal get this way and, you know, mezcalerias and, you know, how did this happen, you know?
Right.
And I think that a lot of us around the country that have gravitated towards mezcal had a wine background. So, you know, I'm a trained and certified sommelier, and I came to D.C. from Yountville, from Napa Valley, and landed in a little place called Oyamel, and... You know, I, as Victor felt blessed about, you know, his path, I felt blessed that I came to OML because it made me fall in love with Mexico. And I looked at mezcal and I was like, oh my God, it's varietals and terroir. Yep. I mean, that is the study of wine.
So it's the same thing.
I approach it that way. We all do it at Poca Madre, Amin and Brittany and Bismarck and the team. And, you know, we just, you know, give people, I'd like to tell guests that, you know, if tequila was Cabernet, think about mezcal as the whole wine list.
But you do have a wine list.
We do have a wine list. We have a great wine list.
You just have to trick this cow.
No, I'm actually, you know, what's funny is I haven't been a hands-on wine director for some years now, and it's been a lot of fun to get back to really having a conversation about Mexican cuisine and wine. And we have a terroir-driven wine list that's, I think it's a little badass wine list that
are you carrying wines from Mexico?
We are carrying wines from Mexico, and we have a great sparkling wine, great Blanc de Blanc from Mexico that is minerally and has a great mousse.
And is that another tough sell point because people aren't familiar with wines from the region?
No, they actually, they make me sell out, and a lot of the wines I'm getting are like a 10-day lead time, so sometimes I have a little gap in them because they're moving so quickly. So
that's
people
great.
Are stoked about Mexican
so
wine.
That's amazing.
I want to take us in a slightly different direction because anybody not in the D.C. area listening may or may not know Victor. They probably would know Victor if they remember that he was on some big programs. You beat Bobby Flay's butt, didn't you?
Yeah, well, not literally, but yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, literally would be a channel.
I beat him.
That'd be a pay-per-view channel, of course. But, I mean, you've had some national exposure and done really, really well. Were you on Hell's Kitchen, too?
I was a judge on Hell's Kitchen. And I was, I'm really proud of the fact that I was a judge on Top Chef Estrellas. That was a lot of fun for me.
Radio Mundo.
That was so awesome, man. It was not like that. No, yeah, it's fine.
Of course not.
Bobby Flay was a fun TV show to do because I really thought I lost in the first round. So it was, it was cool to come back and win.
I bet.
Yeah.
And how does participating in projects like that, take you? Does it do anything for your career? What do you think? Do you just do it for the fun of it? What do you think?
You know, I think it was all the fun. I think earlier on in my career, I was a lot more interested in doing it. Now it's more just about doing the work and the day in and day out more than anything else that excites me. But it was fun. You know, I always had a lot of respect for Bobby Flay. And
right.
Does that create a relationship that matters?
I've seen him a few times here and there, and we talked about it. And my kids walked up to him at the... I think we were at the White House and
my
said,
dad
"My dad,
kicked
my
ass.
Dad kicked your ass." Yeah, and you know, Bobby's, you know, he's an interesting dude, but he was very cool about it and said, "Yes, he did," you know, for all to see. So it was good.
All right, are we going to try another mezcal?
Sure.
Please.
Wow, you guys look at that.
Yeah.
I'm thirsty. I love
you guys putting it down.
There's a lot of bottles here,
I feel like we need to look.
So tell us about the next one.
The next mezcal is from Cinco Sentidos.
Oh, I like this one.
Friends of ours.
Okay, I just want to say that the last two, you said, oh, I really like this one.
The more he drinks, the more he likes it.
Really, oh, I like this one, too.
Can we smoke cigars in here?
No.
That, unfortunately, you cannot do.
But we're in D.C. You can smoke a joint.
Well.
Next time, we'll do that. Wait, don't you have a mezcal
that has cannabis in it?
We do, yeah.
I thought.
We did that on
that's
on
all
previous
you need.
Episode.
We put it in the bong.
It's the bong water?
So this
a little bit.
This is from a group of folks that have a great little restaurant in Oaxaca called El Destilado.
Yes,
and,
it smells very woody.
They also travel all around Mexico. This mezcal is from Puebla, and it's in the Pechuga category. So it's a harvest mezcal. So this is espadine that's triple distilled and with a batch of mole, and then they hang a chicken breast in the neck of the distillate and let all the steamy mole mezcal vapors.
And 3 miles away, they spank a fox.
More like a mapache, but yeah, something like that.
The chupacabra.
They hang a chicken neck in there.
Yeah, yeah. And when the tlacuache crosses the road, then you know it's done. Yeah.
Well, it sounds a little... what's it with the wines? Like voodoo wine, I can't think of the name, you know, like organic wines that they do, like
natural wines.
Yeah, but
David, you look hammered.
I'm just gonna take a nap.
Oh, biodynamic wines,
You know, it's like a little voodoo,
the sun and the moon and the stars and all that. The silica and the cowhorn buried. Yeah,
I feel about this stuff the way I feel about marijuana. Like, you got to be somewhere comfortable and nice because a couple of shots of this are going to put you way back in your
seat.
Right,
but you're not supposed to shoot it.
I don't mean shots.
But I tell everybody, though, I don't think it makes you... It's hard. I'm sure it's called... It's officially drunk, right? The word. But it doesn't feel like...
Just makes you happy.
Yes, it is officially drunk. Yeah.
I'll tell you.
I think it's much more of almost like a high or almost like a, you know...
Agave is the only spirit that is a stimulant, not a depressive. So you actually don't get your motor functions don't deteriorate like they do when you're drinking something else. So
I will tell the police officer that when he pulls over.
Yeah, that's it. You should be driving a race car, but you
don't. Officer, I'm all jacked up.
But a nice stroll down the streets of Oaxaca, you're good.
Yeah.
You're
okay. Good.
So this is, when you smell this, what I love about it
is that
you actually
get
chocolate.
Is that true with tequila, too?
Yes, yes.
Same thing?
Yeah, but you can't have the beer or the whatever.
No.
I think I've disproven that theory with tequila.
But so, the nose on this is just like smelling mole in the kitchen, and that's what's beautiful about it. It's chocolate, there's chilies, there's nuts.
It really smells woody, too.
And then there's a little bit of that chicken sauvage that you get.
Yeah. Just
a little.
Chicken neck.
That yo no sé qué es.
Little chicken dangle.
I think there's a drumstick in my...
Did you just say je ne sais quoi in Spanish?
I did. Yo no sé qué es.
There you go.
There's a lot of say la guerra.
That's in this, Chilango.
This mezcal.
So Vic,
yeah.
What about bringing in product? You're doing a cuisine. Do you use local product? Are you bringing in product from Mexico? How do you fill your menu?
We bring a lot of our stuff in from Mexico. We bring our corn mostly from Michoacan. We bring in a lot of chilies from Oaxaca, chile negros. We do as much as we can to get everything in-house. I mean, and it's available. There are other things that we try our best to do. Michael works hard to get, Huila Coche it's a process.
Talk about Huila Coche. Like, how does that come to you? Does it come as the Mexican corn? Because it's the fungus that grows on the corn, right?
Well, it depends on how you get it. If you get it frozen or if you get it, if you get it packaged from our guy in Florida.
Roy Burns.
Roy Burns. Okay.
Shout out to Roy Burns.
Yeah, the Huila Coche man.
Okay.
Roy, are you listening?
He's definitely not listening. Roy is out in the field wishing Huila Coche.
No, but do you understand? So, like, the Mexican corn is a very big kernel, and it's very starchy. It's so different from American corn.
Well, the Mexican corn we get is a dried product, right? So,
okay.
So that we grind and we wash and we cook. It's very unique. It's very unique. And what we do with it, you make tamales out of it. But our tortillas, like I said, what we were talking about before.
Because you do corn tortillas and wheat tortillas, right?
And flour, yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Okay, but can we go back to... Wait, I can't pronounce it. I can see the word in my head.
Huila Coche?
Yes, I can't say it. But
The corn smut, the truffle that grows on the corn. It's
right, so
scary.
It comes to you frozen?
It can.
What do they do? Scrape it off the corn?
So, if ideally you get the whole thing and clean it all up, but the yield on Huila Coche is...
It's got to be minimal.
I think Michael
it can't
did
be
it
a lot.
You get a pound to a case of corn, so your Huila Coche is somewhere around $36 a pound.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's very expensive.
But it is. It costs that much. I mean, it's expensive.
And it's a very unique flavor.
And what do you do with it? How do you showcase it?
So right now, Michael does it on a drink, and we also do... He'll tell you about it. But we right now, at the end of summer now, we're finalizing the corn products out of our, the fresh corn. We do a corn risotto that we do in the style of the street of Mexico, and then we dab it with the Huila Coche.
But think about that. Like, who was the first person to say Huila Coche is something we can eat?
Well, someone who's really hungry.
Yeah.
Right.
Because let me tell you, it looks
crazy. It's frightening looking.
Well, that's what I mean. Think about it.
It's so different than taking agave and smashing it to make mezcal.
I mean, anything in general.
Right. Anything.
Yeah, but
who's
the first guy to eat a banana?
You can eat agave, can't you?
Can you?
If you're a camel,
I think
I don't
you could chew on it.
Yeah, if you have two stomachs.
It's not like sugar cane, right? It's not like sugar cane.
You have to cook it.
I'm saying it can be cooked, but I mean it's
yeah, no, it's actually, yeah.
And it doesn't look as heinous.
No, it's delicious. No,
I mean, we use a lot of agave syrup.
Yeah, and I've eaten fresh agave right out of the oven, and you just eat it. It's almost like having sugar cane.
It's like sugar cane.
That's what I figured. I figured it was like a sugar cane.
So it's just interesting that somebody would... either be that desperate or figure out how to cook with it.
You're hungry.
Yeah. Well, the Huila Coche that we get is so pristine because Roy cleans it and we get it. And you see the individual kernels and the stuff that I just saw in Oaxaca in the market just made me fantasize about getting it delivered.
Excuse me, this guy's using you like a travel agent, man. He's all over the place.
Oaxaca is the place to be.
Yeah. Let's go to Oaxaca.
Let's go.
But it's the place to be.
But so, we're fortunate enough that we have a very kind person that does the shopping in the market in Benito Juarez for us in Oaxaca and ships us food usually twice a month, once a month. She makes our sal de gusano that you have.
The worm salt.
Her son's a dear friend and a beautiful photographer.
Wait, what is this?
That's chili worm salt.
Chili worm salt?
Yeah. It's so good.
And it's made by my buddy Danielle's mom, Senora Robles, shout out.
But is there worms in it?
Yes, okay. Agave worms. Agave worms. That's the smell, that little sweet, nutty, weird smell.
So agave worms are just like a worm and an apple, like the same sort of thing?
They are, but they're an agave and they're happy.
They're an agave. Yeah.
They have a handlebar mustache on
them. No, they're little.
But they're
very fragrant. They're very, very fragrant.
Do you eat them raw?
I've seen them coming out of Tobala before, and the smell is like it is like 10 times what that smells like when it's dried. They're incredibly fragrant.
I mean, I'm trying to keep an open mind here. I've had this.
Let me just say this for public consumption. Nikki don't like worms.
I'm not a worm. The worm thing.
Go ahead, Nikki. Just dab a little finger in it.
No, this I don't have a problem with. I don't have a problem with this. Are you doing the crickets?
Yes, we are.
Okay, I'm not eating those. Yeah. I did it once,
but I'll make a drink with it. You won't have to eat it. You just drink your cricket.
I don't want
to
drink it.
You have a thing with crickets?
We have those brown jumping crickets that, you know, who are in our...
I have a thing with
bugs. I'll make you a cricket omelet when you come.
I don't want a cricket omelet. I don't have to eat everything.
You're right.
I am pretty open-minded. I eat almost everything that is put in front of my face.
I think you've drank crickets. I think I gave you a Charlie and the Chaplain Factory, didn't I?
No way. I'm a hard stop on those babies. I don't want it.
All right.
I tried them once, and I was like, thank you.
I think it happens.
That's another thing. Like, how hungry was the guy that first ate a cricket?
Okay. You know? Please. All right. So,
it is a food of poverty. I mean, it is amazing protein.
There is amazing protein. I totally get it.
And as you go, as you work your way through,
come over to our house sometimes. We'll make you a cockroach stew.
And there's nothing more Mexican than being at my buddy Danielle. He's in Paris now, and his mother sends him chapulines to Paris. There's nothing more Mexican than being in Paris and waiting for your grasshopper delivery.
Right. Because they're tiny. They're really tiny, and you guys dry them, right?
They can be big, too.
No, I've seen the little ones.
So they're toasted on a comal, the beautiful clay flat tops that you have in Mexico.
When you toast them?
Yeah. So what they do is,
who cares?
Well, I'm asking. Like a little chapulines.
We're humane.
Let me just be clear, when I see a cricket, I'm like, kill it.
No, Victor likes to hit him over the head with a thimble.
A little chapuline 101. So they grow in alfalfa fields.
Yeah.
So wherever you have alfalfa, you get chapulines.
Okay.
And this is, no, sorry for child labor stuff, but they take the kids after they come home from school, they give them nets, and they let them run around their energy, and they go and they kind of adapt. They go and they net out all the crickets.
Okay.
They chill the crickets out for a couple days so they purge, and then you take them and then you...
When you say chill them out, literally?
They put them in a dark room,
And they don't feed them?
Right. So the crickets clean themselves, and then the crickets are almost done, and then you toast the crickets on the comal because they're not jumping anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And a little chili, a little lime, a little garlic.
Let me get this straight. You starve the crickets.
Yes.
That's what it says.
No, it's sensory deprivation is what it is. Yes. You waterboard them?
I mean, you play Metallica really loud.
Jeez.
And then you turn the comal on really hot.
Okay.
And then you have chapulines.
You have our little torture chamber.
That's right. That's right. For the
crickets. What's coming on the menu for fall? I want to hear what's happening for fall.
Too much mezcal flowing right now.
What's happening for fall? Well, tell me.
Oh man, there's so much.
Right,
Nikki. It's all, you know, the way that we work at Poca is very much, you know, inspired. It's like Michael talked about the journey. We're still on that. We're just beginning the journey. So there's, you know, me and Fez are getting in, have already talked a lot, and we'll be making some menu changes next week.
Okay.
But we're, you know, nothing solid completely yet. We're still, you know, conceptualizing. Yeah, that's how we work. We work from the heart. We work, you know, it's, you know, I'm sure, Michael, when we got together, this is the first restaurant we had opened together, and, you know, they were always asking, where's the menu? What's going on with the menu? What's up with the menu? You know, and when the inspiration hits, it all just starts to flow, you know?
Right.
And so we're excited. We're excited for fall.
What about with Taco Bamba? I mean, you have your classics, obviously, but you know, you change up that menu. I mean, it's a large menu for a fast casual concept.
So Taco Bamba, every store has its own menu.
Okay.
Because why make it easy? People get pissed off about it. People start to freak out. They can't get this here. They can't get that there. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, but you know, there's a place for each individual place, and we want every store to feel like it's part of a neighborhood, that it's so Springfield's is Springfield, and we have stuff that's inspired by Springfield. We have stuff that's inspired by...
Well, let me inspire you to come to Kensington. If we put together an investor group, will you put one of those goddamn things in Kensington finally? Seriously.
But the first one doesn't have a bar, right?
No, the first one is still the little engine that could.
Right. All three of the other ones do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they're all kind of different. So the Vienna bar is a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. The Springfield bar is awesome. It's in the round.
It is awesome. Yes.
We have a really good time there. And then the Bamba bar in DC is just it's a monster on its own, you know. And so they all take on the life of the neighborhood, and that's what I really want. I want people to understand that and to take that in and to feel, and you know, once they get, you know, past the anger of not being able to get their favorite taco at each store.
I have to be honest. Calm down, people. My God. Like, I appreciate loving your taco. Don't get me wrong. But, like, seriously, calm down, everybody.
Yeah, no. But, I mean, there are some people who are really nutty about it. I mean,
I have no doubt. I totally completely get that.
We have a regular that eats lunch in D.C. and dinner in Springfield almost every day.
Oh, yeah. I got a guy. Let me tell you something. I have a guy who eats in Falls Church.
Not if you want to live.
And in Vienna.
Wait, what?
Every day. Falls Church and Vienna every day.
Okay, yeah. That sounds
lunch
really
and dinner, lunch and dinner, lunch and dinner. It's really? Unbelievable.
But let me ask you. I'm trying to. I mean, when I come in, I go for the tacos and try all the new things that you're doing. But for people who are trying to eat a little healthier, are you accommodating?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I think tacos in general are healthy. I mean, not everything's got to be the Royale with cheese or the TNT or whatever. Uh-huh. All the crazy tacos. We have, a gluten-free corn tortilla that you could fill with any protein that's light and, you know, either just grilled or you know, chicken thinga or mushrooms. It's just so many options. And and I think that's why people, you know, really love us so much, is because there's so many different options to eat there. If you really want to kind of, you know, fat out and do what you want to do.
You can do that, too.
You can do it.
And you get your torta on.
And, or if you want to have two or three tacos that are light with a little bit of guacamole. And we're good for that, too.
All right.
Well, let's make sure everybody knows where all these places are.
Okay, well, he has one more mezcal.
Well, this isn't a mezcal, but you guys need to taste this, because this was brought from the canyons of southern Oaxaca.
Oh, my God. Okay. I don't even know what this is. What are we talking about?
This is the mango, chef.
Oh, the mango.
This is the mango. So this is 100% mango distillate.
Okay.
It's just mangoes.
Thank you.
It's just mangoes, y'all.
Wait.
It looks
good.
It's okay. It's in Michael's gasoline can.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it looks like, you know, radiator fluid.
Yeah, pass that.
Okay, so wait. This is...
So this is from...
Like this a mango spirit?
This is from the Mescalero, the Master Mescalero Aquilino Garcia from Mezcal Vago.
Thank you, Jen.
So this guy is the one that started Mezcal Vago, and...
thank you, Jen.
He was so excited about this, I never visited his village. It's tropical... Wow. Wait, canyon.
It's made out of mangoes?
All mangoes. It's
so
just,
they treat it like agave?
No, not at all.
Walk me through this.
Aquilino's story is a buddy of his was like, hey, Aquilino, there's a mango tree dropping mad mangoes. So Aquilino told his son, let's go, got the truck. He got a ton of mangoes, fresh, dropped from a tree, ripe.
Right.
Him and his son, with a knife, deseeded them all by hand, and then he put them in their fermentation vat. Him and his son got in, foot trodden to juice them all.
Okay.
Filled it with water, and then the fermentation took off.
Foot trodden?
Foot trodden.
You know, like grape crushing.
Yeah.
Can I just say there's a toenail in my...
Okay. That's not even funny.
And
yes, it is.
And 4 days later...
I don't want to drink it.
4 days later, you had fermented mango juice, and then it was distilled like a master distiller would.
Wow. I mean, it's really perfuming.
It's really beautiful. Nice.
It smells...
It's amazing. Like, it's proof that you can ferment anything.
I would wear this. Like, it's amazing. Beautiful.
It's really nice.
And all Aquilino could talk about was not mezcal, was this mango distillate and how cool he thought it came out.
It's delicious.
So when you serve this, do you serve it with like slices of mango or like dried? Like, what would it do?
This is a gift for people who right now, if you're cool and you're sweet and you have an anniversary or a birthday or you're just saying that you love Mexico.
We are all of those things.
We have all that coming up.
Yeah, no, I mean, we love to do that. Like, you know, I brought a bunch of things back from Mexico and just walk around and pour some things sometimes and just give people a little experience. So
it's good.
This is one of those things.
It's good.
Okay. Taco Bamba, where can we find it?
Falls Church, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Vienna, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Springfield, Virginia. Washington, D.C. And Kensington Maryland. To University Mall in Fairfax, Virginia, across from George Mason University.
Congratulations.
This November.
That ought to be a moneymaker.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
We just want to make good tacos, man. Right. We want to give tacos to people who need them.
Make the people
like
happy.
Students.
Like students.
With their parents' money. Right.
Bring your Mason dollars or whatever that is.
Well, it's your alma mater.
I was going to ask.
It is my alma mater.
Do you take the Mason bucks or whatever they are?
I don't know. I haven't decided that yet.
You
but
totally
I
do that.
But it's funny, like, looking around, Taco Bamba seems to be everywhere I've been throughout my life. So, you know, who knows? Maybe Annandale's next for my friend
I
over here.
I don't want Annandale.
You love Annandale. You know all about it.
We go to your Falls Church one. Come to Kensington.
Right, okay, right. And Poca Madre.
And Poca Madre, you find it at 7th and I Street in D.C. It's
you got to go around to the side.
You got to go. You got to find. You got to find the maguey. You got to find the agave leaf. It's kind of a hidden.
It is a little gem.
Yes. Michael likes to call it Narnia when you cross from Taco Bamba into Poca.
Well, not to mention, for those who have not yet been, it has a glorious outdoor patio.
It does.
It's rocking.
And Bamba's got a new patio out front, too.
Ooh, we'll check that out. But lastly, if we can just mention the gorgeous mural inside, because it is a fabulous piece of art.
It is.
And it's very distinctive and different. If you could just talk about that for 2 minutes before we have to wrap up.
Sure. Richard Liu, who is a photographer, and just all around beautiful man and artist, took a picture of a border wall, of a door of a door on the Mexican border. It was an open door.
Right.
He took a picture of this 30 years ago, almost close to the month of our opening. And we decided to put the mural up as a bit of a statement, you know, just making sure that everyone knows that, you know, we're all about inclusivity and equality and being welcoming to all who want to come.
I love that.
Yeah. And that's the spirit of Poca Madre and Bamba and all that we're a part of. So we just want to spread love and good spicy food and.
Oh, Victor, you're like one of those candies, hard on the outside and soft on the inside.
Don't you know it, my friend.
All right, well, we want to thank you both for coming today and for bringing all this delicious mezcal.
David's drunk. That's true. He's drunk.
I'm fine.
You don't look well.
Yeah, I feel good. And in fact, you better hope I'm okay.
You look fucked up.
Because I'm driving her. He said fucked. All
right. On that note, we want to thank you both for coming today and joining us. We want to thank all of you for listening to us here today.
Who's drunk now?
We love being here.
Full Service Radio. We're here at the Gorgeous Line Hotel. You may also listen to our other show, Foodie and the Beast.
Love
it's on Sundays live at 11 on 1500 AM. That show is celebrating...
10 years.
10 years. 10 years on air.
Unbelievable.
On November 11th. There's going to be a big party. You're all invited.
Can't
Thanks for joining
there.
Us today. We have a great show next week. Kelly DiNardo is going to be in studio. We'll see you then.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.